Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Show our best side. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
Thank you to Jenny Green. It's Thursday the 7th of May and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Clare and Balliet's Tony Kelly gives us the player's perspective on waiting for action.
Rugby agent Dave McHugh tells us why rugby stars are finally doing some work. Imagine that, Marie. Rugby players doing a bit of work.
Actually, I can't. The 2013 Grand Slam winner Jenny Murphy is heading down under and she'll be on to tell us all about it.
3 points apiece here in Palo Viaggio as Briggs comes up and launches this one and kicks it straight between the posts, and Ireland are into the lead here in Milan, and the referee has blown the full-time whistle. Paravaggio erupts and belongs to Ireland. The girls are celebrating out there on the field of play and Ireland have won the Grand Slam for the first time ever.
Oh, brilliant stuff. And we're joined by Jeff Shepherd, who'll be casting his eye over everything that's going on in America.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much, much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. Donica, I'm so glad you're back from your little break because I have a rugby story that I have to put to you. And it always seems to be a rugby story.
Yeah.
Saracens had to issue an apology today because some of their players flouted the lockdown rules.
Oh, no.
Billy Vunipola, Alex Good, Sean Matlin, they were all out having a coffee and a chat.
Wow.
Why always rugby players, don't
you? Why always
why?
Rugby players? And even keep going, why always Saracens? You think one team at the moment that need to keep their head down and not head out. But I think they're the bits that everyone's missing, isn't it? The socialising side of it. And that cup of coffee has a name in rugby. It's called the Sappuccino. It's basically when you meet Marie after training to bitch and moan. It's like it's just a venting spot where...
They have lots to talk about. There's been a lot going on with Saracens.
There's so much to talk about, isn't there? For them, it's
definitely
been a crazy season. That's why I'm looking forward to chatting to Dave McHugh later on. He'll be able to give us the inside scoop on what's actually happening in the rugby landscape.
He sure will. And rugby in New Zealand is edging its way back. No surprise there. Pretty far ahead of us when it comes to easing restrictions. So five teams are going to play each other home and away over 10 weeks with two matches every weekend. So it's a Super Rugby mini-series. Donica, could we see something like that here at some stage?
I think we definitely could. I think something like an Interpro would be really interesting. You know, if we... But then again, you chat to Doug Howlett, I chat to him a bit and he was telling me that New Zealand learnt an awful lot from Ireland and closed down and put in restrictions straight away and then nearly followed the Irish model by not leaving kind of people in or things to go on. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on with that. I actually think rugby in New Zealand could do with it because it's been so disappointed. Call it whatever you want now, Super Rugby... It's gone away from what it was brilliant at, and I think it'll get more kind of country-based, a bit like Sonia was saying to you, go back to regional rugby, and I think it would be powerful to watch that, especially the Kiwis going at it.
Yeah, because as you mentioned, Sonia, there, it's when you're a kind of champion of where you're come from, then that meant a huge amount when she was running, and she'd love to see that coming back. So that does apply to all sports. But the big question is, Donica, will we see rugby coming back? Because social distancing and rugby, it's hard to marry those two words together.
In fact, you get in trouble if you social distance in rugby. That used to be the old policy. If you don't get the cheek of your chin into the cheek of their arse, that you aren't playing well enough. So, but I was reading today, World Rugby have said, Marie, 167 people is what they need to run a rugby game behind closed doors. So at least they're starting to put shape on it. And I think this is what every organisation and every sport is probably doing behind closed doors, tying in with government to see, okay, give us a return to play protocol, give us a return to, even first, a return to training, and then work it out from there. But it's good to hear that kind of numbers, that they actually know it's 167 people to make a rugby game happen.
Well, they seem to have their be getting their house in order and be putting plans in place. But the big question is, though, Donica, international travel. It's hard to see how some of the big series that we have so often looked forward to. It's hard to see them going ahead in this calendar year anyway.
And they're the most lucrative games, Marie. The Six Nations, those big kind of Ireland, England, Ireland, Wales. And you kind of wonder, should they be prioritised? You know, like if we're chatting about having one venue where all the teams go, is that sending an Irish team over? I'm talking out loud now, but do you send everyone to the Millennium Stadium and you run out of competition there, you know, where the most revenues and sponsors are kept happy, and then that does trickle down from the top, you know, if that type of money comes in, that ends up working all its way down to grassroots and AIL clubs.
Yeah, well, it would be very attractive viewing anyway. One thing we do know for sure, Donica, is that there will be no intercounty GAA games until October, which is, I suppose we kind of expected it, but when you say it out loud, it is very difficult to know at this stage that if we do get a championship, it'll be in October, November, and that's if we get a championship at all. So for people who had been looking forward to it, the players in particular, it is difficult. And I'm delighted to say that we have one of those very people on the line. We have Clare's Tony Kelly joining us. Tony, just first of all, what was your reaction to the news yesterday that there would be no intercounty GAA games until October?
I suppose I was kind of preparing maybe for to come out with some kind of a statement. We didn't think we'd be starting up in May or June. I thought maybe August, but I suppose October or August or September is kind of what we were kind of maybe thinking from talking to a few lads kind of around the club set up and the county set up. But look, at October is kind of what they came out with. To be honest, it doesn't change a whole lot from my own perspective. You're still going to be doing a bit of training at home, trying to keep somewhat fit, and I think their kind of goal is, if everything goes to plan, maybe play the club first and see how they go from there. But again, it's whatever. It's over 5 months away, so a lot can change in that 5 months. Hopefully, it'll change for the better, and we'll get to run out and play some bit. But in terms of being surprised, I wasn't all too surprised that they said October yesterday.
Tony, to be fair to you, it sounds like you took the news better than Marie. She was devastated.
I really was.
But you mentioned you're training now. Like, how do you train? Because you know better than anyone, as fit as a flea, you try to peak for a certain time of the year. But when you don't know when that's going to be, how are you managing your load at the moment, training-wise?
I suppose it depends kind of on your situation. I'm not too bad here at home. I've kind of a bit of a gym, kind of a setup in the garage, and I've a massive field beside the house that the uncle owns, so I'm not too bad. I can get out and go for a run and kind of stay in kind of somewhat kind of fitness, you know. You're never going to be match fit, but in fairness, the kind of strength and conditioning coach we have at Clare, he kind of sends out bits and pieces that if you can get them done to stay taken over, you know, if you sat down on the couch for 2 or 3 months, there wouldn't be much point starting back up the championship, because I doubt you'd be able to do much. So it's kind of only tipping away, doing a bit of gym, and then kind of getting your running sessions, and then up again the gavel into the house with a ball. That's kind of where the training's at the minute. Maybe things might ease maybe in July, or say maybe group training and things like that, but for the time being, it's kind of get your gym session done, get your running done, and get a bit of wall ball done then in between. So it's trying to take over, kind of keep those kind of basic things going for when hopefully you do get back onto the field maybe in sometime this summer.
We had Colm Collins on yesterday, and he was saying that he doesn't want panels to be disbanded, because right now it's a really good outlet to chat, to laugh, to see people, to connect, to do the odd quiz, that it's really good for mental health. As a Clare hurling squad, are you planning to stay together during this time?
Yeah, I suppose like any other kind of WhatsApp or group, you kind of use WhatsApp or various different things. You'd be chatting here and there to different lads. I suppose the main kind of lads you'd see if you're out for a run around your own kind of parish or club, more often than not, you're going to meet maybe your club lads running the road as well. So I went for a run the other day. You'd meet, came across 5 or 6 lads doing the same route, coming in different directions. So it's just kind of WhatsApp groups at the minute. You kind of keep in contact with the county lads. We're not doing anything like meetings or anything on Zoom or anything like that. Just kind of chatting over and back ourselves. And as I said, it's more the club lads you meet running around the road, trying to keep themselves fit in the hope that that they might have something. Anytime you meet them, they think that you know what's kind of going on, seeing as you're in with the county. But we know as much as they do at this stage. So yeah, just contact is basically through the phone, really, and whoever you meet in the road while you're out running.
Tony, lockdown couldn't have come at a worse time. You were playing some incredible football, or hurling into the semi-finals. But whatever about performance, you were unearthing unbelievable talent within making like competition for places within your squad.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose that kind of happens when you get new management come in. So everyone that was kind of on the panel last year, maybe that wasn't maybe starting last year, coming on, the slate is wiped clean for them lads, and they can kind of make their own impression with new management. And I even heard Brian said, I think after one league game, he didn't realise how good Shane O'Donnell was. And I think that's across the board. Management doesn't kind of realise maybe how good or how even bad maybe a player might be until they come in and work with him. And everyone got such a freshness with Brian, the lads coming in, that lads kind of took their chance and they got it. Aaron Shanahan was playing brilliant hurling with us. Eric Quilligan in goal, new lad in the panel as well. Aidan McCarthy was flying at a wing back. So different lads coming into the panel. And as you said, we got off to a good start in the league. And I suppose now with this kind of, unexpected break, it'll be hard maybe to get back up and running. But we really don't really care how hard it is to get back up and running, as long as you can get back up and running. That's kind of maybe the attitude kind of from talking to a few lads. They just kind of want to get back and play some sort of hurling or sport this year.
Tony, another big issue I think for a lot of people is the fact that grounds are going to be locked until July, and you're from a very rural parish, I'm from a very small parish as well, and the hurling pitches are the social hub for people. They're an outlet for people. If they want to be on by themselves, they can go in there just for a few minutes. And Cullum as well mentioned that, if you want to go for a run, you can go for a run. If you want to go for a cycle, you can go for a cycle. But your pitch isn't there for you to go and puck around. You can social distance all you want there, but it's just not an option. How big a blow is it to communities not to have their hurling and football pitches open?
Yeah, it is. It's probably a huge blow. It's an outlet for most people, throughout the week of every month. You'd often see, passing the my own home GA field here, you'd often see young lads just poking on the walls. They could just be down there on their own. There could be no one there for hours upon end, and you might see just one or two young lads just poking in the wall or outside in the field. And look, at they're a massive loss, but you can understand that. You can understand it as well if they were to open. There is a lot of people maybe off school, off work, that I suppose they're kind of maybe afraid that people will flock to the field, because in Ballyhea it's the one outlet we have. We only have a pub and that's closed, and we only have two shops. So other than that, it's the GA field. So if that was to open, there could be a lot of people down there. So you can understand why they are closed, but they're definitely a massive loss to the community. Even the people that don't play sport, to come down, walk around the track, or out for a bit of exercise and clear the head. So they are a massive loss in terms of overall kind of well-being in the community.
I think for young people especially, Tony, because I'm sure you spend many hours down there, in the up against the wall ball alley and all the rest. Like, they're such a big part of growing up, I think, when you're from a small place.
Oh, definitely. I remember when I was a young lad myself, you'd spend all day at the field. You go down there from 10 o'clock in the morning, you mightn't come home for 5 o'clock for dinner, and you go back up in the evening, then it's just to watch it. If you weren't training yourself, you'd maybe watch the senior team training. So especially the young people there, and after, they're a huge loss. I know the young lads around here, anytime during the day, during the summer, they'd be down here poking the ball. And especially now when the weather's getting good, it's even more frustrating for them. But look, as I said, hopefully with the stages and the plans and things like that, they haven't too long more to wait, and that they'll be able to go up to the field in a social distance capacity and just get out in the fresh air and start practicing their skills again. Because I say many of them haven't been able to. They mightn't have the facility at home. They mightn't have a wall ball to pop up again. So it is a massive loss for them.
Tony, you're the perfect person to speak on that. Like, sometimes in Ireland we can hold young players back, but in 2013 you were 19 breaking into that Clare team. Just, do you feel sometimes you were given your head and given the opportunity, but there's players that if they were given that exposure at that age, they can make that step up?
Yeah, definitely. If you're good enough, you're kind of old enough. That's kind of the motto. Obviously, some young lads maybe physically develop at different ages as well. We've Aaron Shanahan, I remember, was 17 or 18 when he came into our panel, and he looked like a 26-year-old. I came in at 2013. I was only a slip of a fella. So it depends on the player. But definitely, I think if you're good enough, you're old enough, and it's all about giving lads an opportunity to express themselves as well. With youth comes no fear as well. It's often it's often the older lads on panels to be more nervous going to a game than young lads. Young lads kind of see it as, this is like going playing out in the club field at home, you know. So, you know, they have no inhibitions and they kind of go out and let go. So, yeah, I've no kind of reservations about playing 18 or playing 19-year-olds at senior level. If you're good enough, I think you're old enough. So, yeah, definitely.
And Tony, you've been there. The role of the management, the coaches, everyone around that, you're like, what did the coaches do when you're a 19-year-old in that, you know, All-Ireland winning dressing room? How did they help you to kind of maybe fit in and give you the confidence to go out and play the way you do?
They played a big role in us. Like, Fitzy was over us in 2013, and they kind of give you pointers here and there, but they don't hold you to any specific maybe role or on the field. They kind of let you go out and kind of play your own game, and they give you obviously pointers within the game plan that you might have to carry out, but there might only be two or three of them things. And I remember in 2013, it was literally just go out and express yourself. It was all about, we had the training done. You know, you've done most of this for all of your life. It was just go out and try and carry out the basics. And I couldn't speak highly enough of the people we had in 2013, Fitzy, Paul Knark, Michael Deegan, them lads. We had such a young team that didn't put any pressure on us. It was more so go out and just hurl the way you've always hurled underage and have no fear. And they gave us that platform to go out and I suppose her like that, and thankfully it's paid dividends. 2013. We're still trying to get back there.
You don't have to tell me that, Tony. I know.
Yeah, don't start. Leave them off.
We're still trying to get back there. We're still a few years off 30 yet. So we could do maybe with this year starting up again. So.
Oh, for sure. And Tony, it has been muted that perhaps if the championship does come back in October, November, it'll be knockout. Now, I can imagine knockout hurling in July, August, but knockout hurling in October, November, like, that's a whole other kettle of fish.
It is, but look, it's, it wouldn't bother me. I'm just kind of mad to get back playing. Obviously, I suppose it has to be safe to do so, but it wouldn't really bother me. I think knockout championship, I think that's probably the way it's probably looking. If it would start up in October, you'd only really get October or November probably out of it. But knockout championship, if you had 2 months or teams in a knockout championship, loser goes home, it'd be exciting. Supporters or no supporters, it'd be full-blooded, and same thing in Leinster as well. So even if it was knockout, I wouldn't have any problem with it.
And Tony, just before I let you go, there are, I'm sure, plenty of young people listening who would love to someday follow in your footsteps, even just from a skills point of view, not even to go on and win All-Irelands, just be able to do some of the things that you're able to do with the hurley and ball. Have you any kind of tips and advice for those little kids who are in their back gardens with their jerseys on, probably by themselves, just practicing their skills?
I know it's difficult for them, but there's always things you can improve on, you know. Many people around the country now might think that just because we're locked down, you can't go to the field, that your skills might dissipate or might come back as well, that you mightn't be as good. But you always kind of look in a kind of a situation, try and get good at the things that you mightn't be as strong as. And I always say to young children, one of the most important skills in the hurling field is be able to strike off left and right. You go up and down the country or up and down any club or any road in the country, any intercounty players are out hurling, they're just hitting the ball left and right off the wall. And you can't go too far wrong having both sides, especially the speed of the way the game has gone. And there isn't too many young lads out there that aren't doing it already, but that's my only piece of advice in this kind of lockdown, is keep practicing left and right.
Well, very solid advice. Tony Kelly, thanks so much for coming on, and best of luck over the next few months. Hopefully we'll get to see you playing again very, very soon.
Perfect. Thanks very much, lads. Thanks.
2FM.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Game on
2FM. Right, I love chatting to Tony Kelly there. Just simple, basic advice for anyone that's out playing, isn't it?
just left and right. I mean, it's so true that sometimes you kind of overlook those basic skills and you're trying to be fancy and do flicks and, you know, you think you're Patrick Horgan, but keeping the basics, working at them is key.
And like, no better boy to get the lesson from Tony Kelly, the fella, like, he makes a slitter dance like Aidan Fogarty, doesn't he?
Yeah, you mentioned 2013 and what a star he was for Clare then. And he said it then that it's been a few years since they've got back to the top and time is running out a little bit for that group of players. But, you know, I've got every faith that at some stage they're going to get back there.
Pressure, no pressure. Yeah, absolutely. Look, if you missed it, you can listen back to it on the podcast. But it's mad how sports is moving on. Marie, I think we have a little clip of Cuba Gooding Jr. and Tom Cruise from back in Jerry Maguire.
Jerry, here's the money.
Oh, no, you can do better than that, Jerry. I want you to say it, what you would mean it, brother. Hey, I got Bob Sugar on the other line. I better hear you say it.
Yeah, no. Show you the money.
Not show you. Show me the money.
Show me the money.
Yeah. Louder.
Show me the money.
That's it, brother, but you got to yell that shit.
Show me the money.
I need to feel you, Jerry.
Show me the money.
Jerry, you better yell. Show me the money.
Right, Marie, sports management might have changed an awful lot. If they were reenacting that 24 years on, players would be shouting, show me the player welfare policy, the education programme, the medical experience, the off-field commercial opportunity. Thankfully, we've Dave McHugh. He mightn't have the looks of Jerry Maguire, but he certainly has the care to do right by his players and the people he represents. And we're delighted Dave joins us now. Dave, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Danica. And Marie, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we're delighted.
Not the first time that analogy's been used. somewhere 24 years ago, something must have clicked in the back of my mind when I realised I wasn't as good at being a sports person as I would have liked to have been.
Dave, I know we're slagging about it, but it has changed so much in that space of time. You might give us an indication of how even your role has changed.
Yeah, like, I think it's changed quite dramatically. I was obviously involved in Leinster until 2007, and I had this great brainwave just before the last recession to leave and set up my own business. And when I exited Leinster, I had a sort of a vision of creating my own sports marketing agency, and that always has had and will have an element of player management in it. And I suppose what I wanted to do is to do it differently than it's been done before. Traditionally, agents are seen as those people who negotiate contracts. They turn up every two or three years. They do the deal. They disappear. They take their money. And I just felt that the professional game in Ireland, rugby in particular, and other sports had moved on, and that athletes needed more in terms of support. And, you know, yes, we might be called agents, but we are mentors, counsellors, coaches, agony aunts, problem solvers, you know, revenue generators. And, you know, for me, it's a much wider role than it used to be.
Dave, on that, like, rugby's changing so quickly, and of course there's everything that's going on with COVID, and we're chatting about a global season, but where do you see it going and how could that affect the Irish players?
Well, I was looking for a crystal ball on Amazon during the week because I don't know that anybody knows the answer. I mean, I think there are a number of scenarios that may play out. Ultimately, it'll be dictated to by public health guidelines, allowing professional athletes return to training individually, in smaller groups, in team groups, into contact, and then eventually games. I think the HSE have outlined a reasonably comprehensive roadmap from a public health perspective, and having read the World Rugby guidelines, they too have prepared a very comprehensive strategic document that I think will evolve and change as time goes on and depending on the markers. So it's really hard to predict when rugby might resume in the way that we used to know it. I think, you know, realistically, teams could resume training non-contact in June, contact in July, and conceivably we could see games played in August, September, albeit behind closed doors or with minimal travel. In terms of the, you know, European or even Pro 14 return to play and test rugby, I think that will be somewhat dictated to us by the health of other countries and their travel policies, etc. So, like, I think it's a really difficult one to kind of predict.
Dave, you look after a lot of players. Are they worried about their futures now when we don't know when we're actually going to get rugby back? And also what we do know is that we're probably heading for a recession, which means there won't be as many opportunities for them.
Yeah, nobody has singled out worry as being one of the emotions they're going through currently, because we are all just feeling it out day to day, week to week. I think the Irish rugby structure and the provincial structure has the players in very good managed, almost early pre-season programs. You know, my experience with the people we work with are most are pretty happy with where they're at. They're using the time to develop on a personal level, to read, to relax, and I guess do all the things that they wouldn't do. I think the severity of the situation will only start to hit when the return to play happens, and then there's a bit of a roadmap towards when games are played. So, you know, I don't think anybody's particularly worried. I think we're fortunate as well in the IRFU and the RPI's decision to defer player payments as opposed to make the players take a pay cut. Now, I think that'll be dependent on how long rugby isn't played for, but certainly they sent out very positive signals from the start that they weren't going to axe player salaries from the start, that they would monitor it and defer it. And I think in the UK, the Premiership, and France, it's been straight cuts for a lot of players, so that's probably a little bit different.
Dave,
so very hard to worry about something that you don't know the outcome to.
Dave, I totally agree. I think this is probably going to benefit the Irish structure. You look at maybe, you know, some of the clubs I was involved in England where there's owners and the money might get tight for them in other areas. I know the rugby side of it mightn't be as interesting, but we've never had a year like it. COVID aside, what's going on with Saracens, with everything that's happened in Australia, the market is suddenly flooded with top quality players. What will that do to your industry?
Well, like, again, it's hard to know, but I mean, you could certainly see a correction in salary caps in the UK and France on the back of this, budgets being smaller than they were in previous years. Again, I think, you know, it also highlights the benefits of the centrally contracted system whereby, you know, the IRFU and the four provinces worked very hard to come up with the right model to help all the players in the domestic game. So, you know, I think if you were a player playing abroad, you probably have more immediate concerns, which have purely a monetary, potential monetary negative to them. Whereas here, I suppose we'd be somewhat confident that once rugby resumes, we won't get back to status quo immediately, but we have the potential to generate revenue, and the game is very, you know, fiscally solid here.
And in terms of sponsorship, we have seen some rugby players doing things that we might not have usually seen them do, like just doing Q&As up on Twitter and on Instagram. Are sponsors trying to get more inventive on how they can get something out of their players when there is no games and we don't see them on telly at the moment?
Yeah, there's definitely an element of that. You know, I think companies do the most impactful creative work, you know, in a crisis, because all the disciplinary boundaries go out the window. So I think certain brands have continued to activate reasonably well, given the constraints, and doing press conferences via Zoom, opening their audience or their customer base up to one-to-ones privately through Zoom, and you know, Q&As through social media. So, I think everybody is just trying to feel things out in terms of, you know, how can they get a return on objectives and a return on investment. You know, how can they use the assets that they have in the short to medium term? And I think what's good about all this is that it will change the boundaries of how sponsors activate in the future. It'll definitely make them more creative. And we're probably a little bit stagnant in terms of, you know, most sponsorship is activated through media and PR. It's a very valuable component of it. But it's going to push the boundaries on, you know, media, on content creation, on social media, and you know, it's not every brand is activating. Not every brand feels comfortable activating when they're letting people go or putting them on temporary redundancies, etc. But, you know, a lot of the bigger brands are reasonably, I won't say recession-proof, but are probably better insulated. So we've seen some very creative work from insurance companies and telcos, from Vodafones, FBDs, etc. And we've seen quite a number of sponsors who've been severely impacted being very quiet around this time. So from our perspective, it's about continuing to work with the partners, to try to be creative, to work with their agencies, to try and show them some love and give them back as best we can in this time period, which is different.
Dave, there's obviously pressure going to come on the players, and what will always tend to happen is the marquee and the academy player will tend to be okay, but it's the club player, the kind of you know, the guy that sets a high standard in the dressing room but mightn't be seen for outside it to bring massive strength. They could be vulnerable in a world that's economically tight.
Yeah, but you could say the same about marquee players not being able to earn the same amount as they maybe could 18 months ago or 12 months ago. And we've definitely seen a rise in player salaries nationally and globally. Not too steep here, but you know, fair in terms of value within the market. So, you know, it's going to affect academy players, you're right. You know, there's probably a number of players who are hoping to enter academies in September or in August in pre-season. Those selection decisions will more than likely be delayed. You know, most of the centrally contracted players will be safe enough. The club players, you know, will clubs need to cut back on their spend? Will they need to let players go? Will they be offering lower wages? We haven't got into the detail on that yet. And, you know, through our partnership with eSportif, we have a very good global picture of every league and every club competition, league and club, wherever on the planet, is looking at different ways to retain talent, to attract talent and to manage the talent they have. So for us, it's no different than anybody else. It's an ever-evolving situation. And I think it could be very different from country to country. But certainly, you know, again, it highlights the values of the centrally contracted system here in Ireland.
Dave, when we do come through this, which we eventually will, what's going to be different about what you do?
That's probably a very good question. I mean, and we're spending a lot of time, because we have a lot of time now, you know, trying to look into the future in the best way that we can and sort of say, well, look, how are we going to be resilient through this challenging time? You know, what can we do differently than we've always done before? And I think any business and in any industry does become stagnant. And often you need a bit of a crisis or an upset to get you to think in a different way. You know, we haven't identified five key things that we're going to do differently, but we're certainly, you know, spending a lot of time brainstorming ideas around creating content, around, you know, further developing our athlete support model to, you know, assist players in their personal and career development. And also now using this time to see how we can push the boundaries in activation around sponsorship. And, you know, for me, good partnerships come from credibility, and it has to be win-win on both sides. So we're spending a lot of time now identifying players' personal interests, their interests way beyond playing the game, and then looking at new emerging industries where we can kind of match them up with. And there aren't going to be many deals done in the next 6 months on the commercial side of sport. So the primary goal is to maintain and deliver value to the partners we have. And there's been a lot of time looking at, you know, just exactly what you said. What does the future of sports marketing and sports management look like in the aftermath of a global pandemic?
Dave, it is a professional game, a business, but in every other business, you get the opportunity to say goodbye properly. What about the players that, you know, are contracted to June? What if they don't get that opportunity? How are you preparing them?
Again, because we don't know whether players that are out of contract will be extended through to, as we heard in Fergus McFadden's press release during the week, that he would play till the end of the season, whenever that may be. So if the season is terminated, he may have no choice. You know, there are certain players, again, who may be extended on the back of this because of their value proposition if there's going to be 5, 6, 7 test games played before Christmas. So again, on a case-by-case basis, You know, obviously every player wants to have their send-off. You know, they want to be recognised for their contribution to the game. I think people think about it differently. And I think as well, because this is a global pandemic and has such a huge impact on society, you know, the selfishness of wondering, are you going to get clapped off the pitch, possibly isn't in the fore of people's minds at the moment.
Dave, thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully we'll get to see a few of your lads back out there, but we really appreciate your insight.
Please God, and stay safe, both of you, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Dave. Now, sticking with rugby, we mentioned at the top of the show that we would have Jenny Murphy on. Over the last few weeks, we've been lifted a little bit by match commentary, and RTÉ have been shown some classic games. Tonight, they are going to show the Ireland Women's Grand Slam win against Italy. And I'm delighted to say that Jenny Murphy is here with us to relive those great days. Jenny, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
We're great, we're great. Just looking back on 2013, Jenny, I know the weather wasn't great and all the rest, and it wasn't a classic, but it was a big win for you.
Oh, that was massive, that game. Absolutely brutal to watch. I haven't watched that game at all. I was watching on the sideline. I got injured the match before, so it was myself and Ashley Baxter freezing in the subs jackets. Squeaky bum time, because it was 3-3 for a significant portion of that game. But it was so special. I think for a lot of the, I would have been a younger player at the time to have experienced how important it was for the senior players, the likes of Fiona Coughlin, Joy Neville, and Lynn Cantwell, and you could see how much it meant to them to finally have that release. The first time we ever beat England was that year, and then just the joy and the fact that we got to celebrated absolutely destroyed, covered in mud, but it was just a really good day at the office, and you look back at it now and it's just plenty of good memories.
Fair play to you, Jenny. You haven't helped us forward sell it. It's on tonight on RT2 and 9:30.
And it's not as bad as Jenny says.
It's not as bad as Jenny says.
I know, it was just like, you know, a 3-3 game. It's not exactly, you know, tries a minute.
Oh, I love those
but
ones.
It was tense, and the forwards did all the work. So, you know, watch that.
One thing that really stands out from that time, Jenny, when you think of the word team, your performance and that group of players, it just epitomised what a team should stand for.
I was so lucky going into that, because I thought it was just the norm. You go into a squad and you're battling for a jersey and you're battling for a start. But it was, like, I remember I was aiming for the centres, and it was myself, Grace Davitt and Lynn Cantwell, and I was rooming with Grace, and Grace kind of would spend an extra 20 minutes after every session going over moves with me and taking me aside, and we roomed together sometimes, and instead of going down for the purple snack with the senior players, she'd stay behind and, you know, make sure that I understood the why behind certain moves. She didn't have to do that. I pulled her aside when they was like, Grace, like, why are you helping me so much? And she's like, well, if I make you better and you're better than me, then you're better for the team, and that's the most important thing. And like, to have that run through the squad, I think I took it for granted. I just assumed every high performance team is like that, but it's definitely not. And it was just really special to, you know, everyone wants the team comes first, and just to see it epitomised from someone like Grace and the rest of the squad, that's how you build something special and eventually get a medal in your hands and play some great games, Ruby, and win some great matches.
Absolutely, Jenny. And you touched on it there, and you've mentioned some of them, Joy, Lynn, Grace. Hey, how's the WhatsApp about tonight? Have you been firing messages over to you? Are you going to watch it as a group?
We watched the New Zealand game as a group a while ago. It's the first time a lot of us have ever watched it. So I think there'll be a few, there'll probably be the WhatsApp group with a few screenshots of everybody, because everyone is just looks brutal after the game. Like, Malloy got hypothermia and she missed half the limoncello after the game. So there'll definitely be some abuse thrown around anyway. And I think Joy Neville was, I think she should have probably got pinged for a penalty that she didn't. I think she's, you know, even now as a ref, she's on the edge. So even then, she's probably going to get some abuse as well. But that's no different to normal anyway. That's kind of go her direction.
Jenny, the potential of that women's team, and it was a movement at the time because I think just rugby, women's rugby really burst into everybody's consciousness when that happened. Between now and then, do you think that the game has developed enough?
No, definitely not. Which is really disappointing to even say that. You know, playing numbers have gone up. There's been some amazing talent that have come through the squad. You've got like really young players that are performing really well. But can the team do better? I think they can because they've got the talent there. I just don't think that they're supported enough. You know, like they've had their Six Nations games last year, no summer tests, and one game in November. Like, you can't build. It's so, you need more matches, the better. We need an under 20 squad. We don't have that. I think we're the only women's Six Nations squad to not have an under 20 side. Hopefully that's changing soon. But you would just like to see more support because teams in the past have done well and you constantly want to build and drive on. Instead of kind of going with the motions and, ah, sure, it's good enough, instead of kind of always wanting to get better and progress, I think you're just letting down a side that at the moment has a serious amount of potential.
And Jenny, like, this obviously isn't the first time this conversation has been aired. I think most people are very aware of the difficulties and the challenges that women's rugby has faced in this country, and I'm sure that they have been brought to the association. What's been the reaction when it's been presented that you're not being supported enough?
It's unfair to kind of, I guess I'm in my own bubble, and who you're friends with and your family are obviously frustrated and you know, but peeved about the whole thing. But like outside of that, I don't know. Irish people, they support anything that's doing well. They're so good that way. That we're the best bandwagoners around, and I mean that as a compliment. They want to see Irish teams do well, and when they're given ample support, like there's talent in this country, and they're more than capable of doing that. I think though there needs to be more of a drive. It's easy for me. I'd like more people to get more frustrated and vocalise, but sometimes just a lot of people don't know. Some people don't know that the 15s game, the women are still completely amateur. They work full-time jobs and they try and work around that. And a lot of it is just they don't know that the girls at the moment aren't professional, and so they assume that, you know, they're being supported, you know, like other nations like New Zealand and England are at the moment, when in matter of fact that the gap is widening, and you see the likes of, you know, England in particular is doing so well. They've gone professional. The Tyrrell 15 Premiership over there is now one of the best, you know, women's competitions in the world. And that kind of competitiveness and professionalism, it breeds success for the national squad, but it also for grassroots levels. You've got, you know, young girls that kind of see Gloucester and they see Harlequins and they want to play on that team and then work from there. There's quite a clear pathway to a national jersey. And in this country, it's not as clear.
And Jenny, that's what's hard to see. Like, you look at it now tonight, here we are leading the way, winning Grand Slams, but 7 years on, and there's still bigger challenges than there probably was back then. What would you see? You mentioned the under 20 squad needs help. What else needs help?
Oh, there's smarter people than me that can have definitely more succinct answers. I'd like to give them the tools to succeed. You know, don't remove as many obstacles as you can in order for them to get better. And I'm not just talking about the national squad as well. It's like more women's games. Like, you know, you've got great coaches within Leinster, Munster, and across the provinces. Maybe more games with them. You've already got a professional setup built within this country at the moment. Do you maybe have more provincial games? I'm not really sure where the answer is, but I know that there's a better way of doing things than what's currently happening at the moment.
And like Jenny, we are clearly in a pandemic, we're in a crisis, we don't know what the future is going to look like, but we do know it is going to be extremely challenging. And I think there's a lot of concern out there that if something is going to get hit after we come out of this, that it will be women's sport.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously we're quite vulnerable in that we might be the easiest to kind of, or it might be like, let's save some money, cut it. We're not going to rock the boat too much, which is such a pity, because maybe this is the time where, you know, people can start looking at older games and see just how good women's rugby can be at the moment, and they mightn't know the results of the score, so it's kind of like watching it live. I don't know. It would be such a pity, because it was building before this. I don't really know what the answer is. I feel like I'm saying I don't know an awful lot in this interview, but just generally there's so many unknowns at the moment, and it's kind of all a bit up in the air.
Jenny, when we look at your own career, we'll see the Grand Slam tonight, but there was also two Six Nations Championships, a World Cup semi-final where you claimed the ultimate scalp, the win over the All Blacks. What stands out for you?
I guess it sounds like such a cliche thing, but the friends and the crack that you make with some of the girls that you get those big wins and those horrible losses, you know, it's great to have the highlight reels and be able to say, oh, look, I can chuck a ball around pretty well, or I tackled pretty well in that game and I worked, and it's all lovely, special moments. But for me, the best thing about all those is the friendships that I've got over rugby and the people that I've met. And hopefully I've got a bit of life left in me to make some more friends and win some more matches and kind of see what happens from there.
And that'll be in New Zealand, Jenny, will it? Will that be in New Zealand?
Yeah, the original plan was that I was going to head over there in June just to see what it's like over there. I was really lucky to get to play with some really talented players, including a few Kiwis, with the Barbarians in November. And it was just like a life too short. Sure, why not give it a crack? I want to get better, and I think over there it's not a bad place to throw around the ball and improve your skills. So hopefully I'll be able to get over there and play some ball before the end of the year, but we'll see.
Well, Jenny, we will be following you with a lot of interest. Thanks so much for coming on. And if you go on to Jenny's Twitter account, she is supporting the Alzheimer's Tea Day, and it'll direct you where to donate.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Fam.
Okay, in the new world of days rolling into each other, you can find it hard to keep track of the day, week, even month. Not here on Game On, because every Thursday we catch up with our favourite American. No, Marie, it's not Oprah Winfrey. It's Jeff Shepherd. Shep, how are you?
I'm great, Donner. You know, it's amazing. That's the only way I'm able to keep track of the days of the week, too, whether or not I'm going to be on Game On.
Well, Shep, good news. We might have another way of keeping track of the days and the weeks, because it looks like sport is coming back stateside.
Well, I would say it looks like they're going to start dipping their toe into the water of a potential comeback. But yes, Marie, I mean, the leagues are starting to put their plans together to have people back in the buildings. And of course, you know, less than 10 and social distancing and wearing masks and doing all of the things that have now, you know, kind of become accustomed to life in these crazy times. But yeah, I mean, Major League Baseball and the NFL and the NBA are starting to, you know, to get their plans together. I think baseball will likely be the first sport to actually, of those three, to come back and play. You know, we've seen the Korean baseball organization started up this week, and you know, fans in the stands, and you know, all these different things that you have to do nowadays. So hopefully we may, you know, in a month or so, maybe have some games to actually watch and talk about here in the States. But, you know, I think something could quickly change if things go badly, you know?
Yeah. Shep, just on it, the NFL commissioner, they're saying as soon as Friday the 15th of May, which is next week, that they could start looking at reopening with team facilities with some protocols.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. So right now, I read an interesting article earlier this week. You know, right now would be the time of the year where, you know, the draftees would be going and meeting their new teammates and, you know, maybe having some, you know, rookie workouts and doing some different things like that. So now you've got, like, you know, the offensive line groups are, or the wide receivers or the defensive backs, they're having meetings, but they're doing it just like everybody else is. They're doing it over Zoom or Skype or something like that. And so work is continuing. It's just continuing kind of like we're all doing it right now from our home or, you know, from somewhere else. So you'll start to potentially get some people in the buildings, but I mean, you're going to just like at a regular office. I mean, you're going to have to have the social distancing. You're going to have extreme cleaning going on, you know, much more than was probably being done in most places beforehand. So I think that there's going to be a new normal that we're all going to have to get used to as we kind of start, you know, assimilating back into the workplace.
I know we're tight in time, but we didn't get to chat about Michael Jordan's documentary. I did get a giggle out of it when his mom had to force him to go meet Nike.
Well, that's why you should always listen to your mother.
I always listen
to her. Because I think it helped him become a billionaire, signing that contract and going all the way, going out to Oregon to go sign. But yeah, it's been phenomenal. And look, you could tell from day one, the dude has just got a killer instinct, and he's still got it today. And that is the thing that separates him. And I did want to say real quick, the NFL is going to announce their schedule tonight. We'll see how much of that changes and when it's supposed to start. You know, I think they're planning on a regular start date, but it could be regular start with no fans, or maybe it's pushed back a couple of weeks to see if you can have fans in the building. That's going to be something to keep an eye on tonight, guys.
Super stuff. Shep, you might keep us informed. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On.
Cheers. Thank you.
It's something, Donica, when we are getting excited about fixtures being announced.
What are we going to actually do when we have to talk about sport on the show?
I think we're going to have to do it very, very soon. It's starting to come back. That is all we have time for tonight. We will be back tomorrow, though, and we'll have Linda Njungan, Dick Clerkin and Salem Kelly.
2FM. Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.